Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Well, hello and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America, where it has been a crazy time. We were hearing a lot on the news about the hurricanes down in Florida and on the coast last week, and we here in Middle America were supposed to have a severe thunderstorm warning, and it turned out, as I was watching the clouds, that I saw wall clouds and hook clouds, and we did not have a tornado. However, we had something a little more rare. I've only known of a couple of them in my long life here in the Midwest, but what they call a straight line storm, and there were gusts of 96 miles an hour. Wind was clocked in a number of places, and so we wound up having huge old neighborhood trees all over the city, downed, blocking streets, hanging over power lines, breaking out windshields of cars, some that skewered the roofs of houses. Going to be a pretty big mess. And I was just telling my co-host that we are going to be a long time for cleaning up the city, but that the night of the storm, Friday night, 200,000 people lost their power, and we were one of those from midnight until noon the next day, and it turned out we were lucky. There's still people, and this is Wednesday. This happened Friday night. Last night, there were 35,000 people that still had their power off. Tonight, I believe 16,500, something like that. So turned out to be a heck of a weekend. Scary time Friday night, and then everybody's been doing tons and tons of cleanup, and tonight we're supposed to have another severe thunderstorm just as people are starting to get things cleared up. So anyway, hoping that doesn't happen. In any case, I did play the generic introduction, so I will say welcome to Brain Injury Radio and welcome to the weekly Wednesday show, Recovery Now. I'm your regular host, Kim Justice, and I'm fortunate on the second Wednesday of each month that I have a fabulous co-host, Karen Robinson, who I'll give you a little information, actually, about the show in general, in case you're new here, and tell you where you can find more about Karen, and then you'll actually get to hear her. Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed in the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, It Takes a Good Bit of Warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. If you want to know more about me, you can find it at inaflash.org. And Karen Robinson, who I am going to be bringing on now, you can find more about Karen and her wonderful blogs and resources at her site, hopetbi.org.com. God, sorry folks, I screw that up almost every week. I think I got the hope before the TBI, but I'm going to bring on Karen, and then I see we have a caller. So I'm going to bring on Karen and greet her, and then I will take the caller. If there's anyone else who'd like to call in tonight, the number is 424-243-9540. I forgot to say, too, it's just, boy, for me, I apologize for being scattered tonight. Aside from the storm, got some health issues and other issues going on with my folks. And my Frenchie, my French bulldog, Benny, also starting last weekend. This has just been a hell of a week, I guess. Excuse me. So my thoughts are scattered to the wind, but he got an ulcer on his eye. I noticed he wasn't opening his eye all the way, and he had to wait. This started on the 4th of July, actually. So the 5th was Monday. And I got a hold of the vet that night and had him come the next day, and we've been giving Benny eye drops in his eyes 4 times a day, and doctor's been back a couple times. Seems to be healing, not completely gone, but that's always worrisome. You hate to see, animals hurting and not be able to do much to help, but I think the drops have really been helping him as the week has gone on. And so just kind of crazy hectic. So y'all know what it's like to have when it rains, literally it pours, and a lot of full basket syndrome going on. So hopefully Karen will be able to bring some balance to my chaos tonight, but I'm going to bring on Karen, and then we will let Michael tell us how he escaped the hurricane. Welcome, Karen. So glad that you're here tonight. How's it going in your neck of the woods? And is it .com or .org? I'm so sorry.
You're totally all right. It's www.hopetbi.com. You are close.
That's what I thought. I thought so. I just, all of a sudden, I was sitting there looking at mine that's .org, and I'm like, com was coming out of my mouth for you, but I was like, hopetbi.com, folks, for more information on Karen. She's got some great blogs and resources. Make sure to check it out. And that should be written in the program notes. I've got the chat room open, so I can't see my own program notes, but I'm sure that it's in the program notes for everybody. So anyway, everything going good in your neck of the woods? Have you avoided weird weather? Are you just getting heat, or are you guys doing better than the rest of us?
Well, we're definitely doing better than the rest of some of the storm-ridden parts of the nation. We've had tumultuous rain spurts, but nothing tornado havoc that has been going on. I know there was a couple of tornado touchdowns here in Michigan within the last couple of weeks. No major damage, and gratefully, from my understanding, there's also no loss of life. So that's fantastic. As far as the storms elsewhere, the current event that I've been the most, I guess, aware of and focused on right now is that really just tragic condominium collapse in Florida.
Oh, I know.
And I was really just overtaken and just following the news on that. And every time they find more bodies, I just send up another prayer and another blessing for the families. And it's just heartbreaking, like whole generations lost, like whole families lost, like 3 generations, 4 generations in that collapse. And, you know, we're not used to seeing that kind of tragedy here in the United States to that degree. I think the last time we saw tragedy to that degree was 9/11. You know, it's while that's unusual for our country, that does happen quite a bit in other countries like Turkey or, some of the places where there's some parts of Italy even, where there's a lot of earthquakes and they're used to some of these crises happening from Mother Nature, that we're not used to really seeing that level of tragedy here. And so I think that the loss of life that is involved in this is just astronomical. And, you know, and I think this inspires a lot of us to really just be grateful for our families and grateful for the opportunity we have for that time with our families. And it just really just reminds you to appreciate the life that you have and the moments that you have it.
Yeah, definitely. That's where I got my in a flash, because that's how quickly things can change. In fact, Michael, let's bring him on and let him say hello. He lives in Florida and Tampa, and I'm not sure how far away that is, but he lives on the 13th floor. And when I talked to him last Wednesday for a moment, the storm had cleared, the hurricane had cleared where he lives in Tampa, and he did not sustain any damage. But I was thinking about the 13th floor in the condo. I'm going to bring Michael. You're on the air. So how far away was this collapse from
miles.
Tampa?
100 miles.
Wait, that's
100 miles out in the Gulf. Yeah. But we got some of the bands. We got some of the bands. Yeah, but we missed a lot of the... Hello, Kim. This is Michael.
Hey, Michael.
Hello. Can I
Michael.
Tell you, can I tell my email thing, too?
Yeah,
can
sure.
Okay, here goes. fb.me/MFC1 books is my books. And yes.
Right now,
Kim,
I get
hello,
it.
Kim.
I do have
okay,
a question for you.
Okay.
Who made
yes.
up that website?
It's who made it up? A lady at Disability Achievement Center, because I have a problem with my brain and I can't do things like that.
I see. Well, we may have to think of something a little bit easier. That's a very hard hard website to remember. I wish it just said maybe silentcries.com, and then it would have information
yeah.
about you and all of your books on it. But see how much easier that would be to remember than than
yeah.
what you just
yeah.
said. Go ahead and say it again now
yeah.
that I know what you're talking about, because when you said email,
okay.
you were really
okay.
talking about your...
Okay, you ready? F
and
dot me slash FB, facebook.me/MFC1 books. And that's it.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Great. Well,
okay.
we'll talk about seeing if we can't find you a different website
yeah,
and move
please.
That over to
yeah.
something a little... easier. If the lady has trouble, I might have you hook me up with her. It was really nice of her to make you a website, but
yeah.
if we can get the admin information from her, not me, but my husband who made my website. Maybe we can get you a different website that's a little easier to remember.
You see, no one will marry me. Well, because I'm
now what I
no, ladies, because I'm too crazy. Kim, tell her I never stop. I have a head problem and I never stop. For 52 years, I've never stopped, and that's how I put myself in this position. And I live on the 14th floor. I have a penthouse.
Oh, all right. I was off one. So that's good. It's not unlucky 13. It's lucky 14.
Yeah, right. And I look out over the water. I look out over the bays. I look out over the marinas. I look out over everything.
Wow. So
ooh,
do you get
little,
to see,
that's a
like,
high for me.
View, though, I guess, if you're looking at the ocean, do you get to see the sunset or the sunrise?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yep. And I'm scared of heights, too. Did she say she was scared of heights too far up? I'm scared of heights, too. It's like I'm on the first level, though, because I never look down.
There you go. It's one way to get past it. Some people say you're supposed to focus on it, but no, you just don't look. That's even better.
You know, that could be a whole other show about how we cope by avoiding.
Yes,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. I've been around 52 years, and that's exactly how I've done it. Is things that don't make me feel good, I just ignore. What means a lot to me is survival, my push forward, my always continuing to move on, never stop and never looking back at yesterday, if yesterday was a bad day or something, always push forward and keep going. Never give up. That's my slogan, right, Kim? Never give up.
That's right. I was just asking, somebody in the chat room was asking, your books are on Amazon too, right?
No. I got kicked off. I was on Amazon for 6 years, and I got kicked off. They suspended. And don't ask me why, but I took it as an insult at the time because I was doing nothing wrong. Maybe I called up and asked them questions too much, but I took it as an insult, and I just left them because I don't need them. I don't need anybody to do. I go around the state and do presentations, and I sell a bunch of books when I do presentations. So I'm very happy in my own skin, if you know what I mean.
I do. I'd be interested to know. I mean, I'm used to getting kicked off Facebook and Twitter and things like that, YouTube, Google placing their pages strategically, but I haven't ever heard of Amazon kicking. Well, I have heard them doing censorship when it comes to books, not letting certain ones on and favoring others, but not your books. Yours have been there a long time.
I'm still on Kindle. I'm still on Kindle, but I don't get paid for that. They never send me anything anymore. I've been on Kindle ever since they were published. And,
well, if you're selling, they still have to pay you.
Silent Cries is, no, they say they're giving them away now.
No, wait. Wait a minute. Just so you know, and I don't think I'm wrong about this, they give people a chance, usually it's with Audibles, but maybe with Kindle, too, they will give people, they're trying to get people to join a club where they, you know, will get like a few books a month to be able to read. And so they're allowing people where it says that your book is free. It just means it's in the selection that they'll let people who join their club and pay a monthly fee read your book for free, but they still have to pay you whatever you would make if you're selling, if you were selling them. They don't have the right to take your proprietary work and give it away without paying you what you have due. So I'd check your bank account, because a long time ago they did started doing automatic bank deduction and quit sending checks. That's when I kind of started losing track, but they can do a lot of things, but not steal your money. And your books were not controversial at all and had been up there for long time. So I would...
My story.
I know. That's what I mean. It was nothing
This is not good for right now. This is not good. I'll talk to you after the show about, you know, about
something like
this. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
like
that's cool. The only reason I wanted people to know, Michael, there's other people that have written books out there, and they might wonder about that, too. I did when I saw that they were charging zero for mine, and I made a call.
Yeah. Yeah, well, tell you the truth, that's the problem, is it overloads my brain, you know? I'm a pretty smart guy, but sometimes my brain, because I destroyed my head. You know, my brain and all that I know is to keep moving forward. And if I do that, I seem to be healthy and the world works out and this, that, the other thing. But I never stopped. And my books I did personally by myself. Nobody helped me in doing them. You know what I mean? And so these people that understand all about this, they probably have somebody helping them.
Yeah, so, that's what I was saying, though. Not everybody does understand, so I wanted them to know to check their bank accounts, because they Amazon can't give away your work without paying you.
But anyway,
you.
I have something to tell you, Kim. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
I'm almost to 700 shows. I've called the network almost 700 times since 2013.
Gosh, you have more shows than a lot of our hosts.
Kim, I just love you. I mean, I call up. Granted, I may not get on every night, but at least I listen, right? I listen to a little bit, you know?
And always appreciated. Always appreciated.
That's,
and I'm glad when
times, Kim,
we can have you on.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, keep coming back.
Another thing. I have to stop my ramp building. You know why? My boss, I'm going to tell you, my boss had, first of all, he was not a healthy person. He had a kidney transplant, and then he had cancer like I had down there that they had to radiate out of me, which was okay.
Right.
No problem. They did it right. And now he took me to lunch the other day, and guess what he told me?
He's got it.
No, he has lung cancer now.
Oh.
Stage
I'm sorry
four
to hear
lung
it.
Lung cancer. Yeah. Well, he's 84 years old. He's 84 years old. And, yes, I almost cried because, you know, without him, I can't build any ramps, you know. I need him around to be the boss. I'm second in charge, but you still need someone, you know?
Well, we'll say prayers for him, but it would be nice if he helped, you know, acclimate a new boss, because you guys' mission statement for people with disabilities has been so good and so important, and you got it approved by the city council and all that. So I'm hoping they can find that he can help find somebody to step in his shoes.
Kim, I'm raising my hand. Call on me.
I'd like to make
a big announcement, okay? I'd like to make a big announcement right here. For 2.5 years, you know, you know about my Moby mats that I try to get laid on the beach for people with disabilities to be able to wheel out to the beach? Well, call on me. I'm raising my hand.
Michael, did you have something?
Okay, thank you. Yes, I have something to thank you. Are you ready for this? Last
month, on the edge of my seat.
I've been working 2.5 years to try to get backing to lay these Moby mats. I've been going to town halls. I've been making presentations to council people almost all over the county. And guess what?
Found someone?
I found a foundation that's going to back me 100%, Kim.
Yes.
100%. Yes. Kim, I'm laying 8 of them.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
That's just a miracle,
awesome,
but not.
Buddy.
Thank
but
you. Thank you. I'm laying
work.
8 of them. Yeah. Two and a half years I've been working on this. And I finally found a foundation to back me 100%. And I'm going to lay 8 of them on this side of the, on the Gulf side of Pinellas County. Yeah.
Congratulations. That's fantastic. And
yep.
I would
Thank
say
you.
Miraculous,
Very
but a lot of times
that.
We have a hand in making our own miracles. So that's really great to hear for all the work that you've done and all the people that have enjoyed the mats you've already made, that there'll be so many others able to experience the ocean that never have been able to except from afar. So what a service.
That's
Yay.
Right. Yep. Yep. And
well,
now,
thank you for
what,
sharing that with
guess
us.
Guess what I have to do, though? Guess what I have to
Uh-oh.
Do? The DEP got involved, and you know what they said? Are you ready for this one? I'm going to tell you. I got to
What is it?
Kim, this is sort of funny, because I love turtles, you know? And I got to wait for the end of turtle season, though. They won't let me lay them until turtle season is over.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I got permission. I got permission to lay them all over anywhere I wanted to, but I have to wait till the turtle season.
Can you tell us, because some of us may be unaware, what is turtle season?
You know, the big turtles in the ocean come. I don't understand why, but they come all the way up on the sand, and they come up far from the water
Later
and
eight.
Dig a hole, and they lay like 100 eggs, and those things all hatch into little turtles, and then when the little turtles are born, they all march to the ocean.
God, that must
and,
be cool. I'd like to catch that on film, but when are the months is what I mean. I kind of got the concept, but when...
October, November, sometime. October, November, sometime.
I gotcha. Okay.
Because
it stays warm there all the time. So
might be a little cooler
at that time, though.
I laid 2 of them before the DEP got involved. And so I have two ramps already laid.
Well, hopefully there weren't many turtles under there, but that's good that you're able to accommodate the turtles and do the mats. So you're helping wildlife and human life and everybody now. So that's not bad. A couple months off, and then you'll get them going again, and the turtles will lay them around the mats after that.
Right.
So, well, that's very interesting. I had no idea. That would be pretty cool, because I bet just like the nests of the birds all hatch around at the same time, it would be cool to see all those turtles marching to the ocean after they come out of their eggs. I hope somebody, I'm going to have to look on YouTube and see if anybody got footage of the turtles marching out to sea.
Yep.
I'll do that.
Okay, well, Kim, it's so great to talk to you. I got to say goodnight because it's getting late down here. And you have you do have a guest, so great to talk to you. Love you all. All right?
All right. All right, Michael.
All right,
good night.
Signing off. Bye. Good night.
Good night, Michael.
Bye. Good night. Who knew there was a turtle season? I had no idea. Makes sense, though. I knew that they came out from the water to dig a hole to put their eggs in, but I never figured on a Moby mat getting rolled over their nest. Oh, God. Anyway, I'm glad that's resolved. Jeez.
Yeah, you bet.
Phew. Wow. Well, that's pretty cool. He
sounds like
tenacious.
He's got a lot of exciting stuff going on in his life right now.
He does. He does. And that's really great. A lot of times it's what you make it. You know, he's had his moments of feeling blue like the rest of us have, but he's right about, he keeps moving forward and punching on and coming up with new ideas and making things happen. And he's a really good lesson in when you've been told you can't do something, if you feel strongly about it, whatever it is, not letting that be the answer and quitting too soon. When it came to those mats in the beginning and then the funding, like you heard, 2 years, and the same thing happened when he went to write his books in the beginning. He got told, got told he couldn't, and here 3 books later, he has. So, you know, if you believe strongly in your heart, you've got a calling to do something, there will be people that stand in your way sometimes for a variety of different reasons that generally have nothing to do with you. It's something someone else is dealing with. And pursue it. Keep going. Don't let one no be the final answer, because chances are there is a yes. Those ebooks. Now, Karen was just talking about that she's working on a book also, and some ebooks. I was just reading on Amazon about, I didn't know if they were ebooks or if they have regular stories, but there's something new on there that's happened in the last couple weeks that it registered with me to do it. They're like novellas, but I think they're called something like short reads. You got my attention when you wrote that in the chat room, but Amazon has something new going on where you write short, a couple pages, I think. Don't have a clue. Do you make the chapter titles first? I think that you kind of tell part of the story that I read it 2 different ways. The first time I read it, it was just like they were basically looking for short stories, which a short story isn't always so short. You know, a short story can be fairly long, you know, 25 pages or whatever. Or it can be literally a shorter story. But obviously those are a lot shorter than hundreds and hundreds of pages of books. And the first time I read the blurb, I thought that's what they were looking for, were short stories. But the other day I saw an example of something they put up there. And again, they're in the pile of emails to stay that I kept and didn't delete to go back to. And I haven't. I've still got them saved. But every day I got a new mountain on top. I've got to delete down to that point, and then I've got to leave and do something. But it looked like they were doing something like that, Ron, and that was like telling their story in chapters. I don't know related at what frequency. But anyway, I guess we'll look that up for any of you that might be have thought of writing a book, wanted to write a book, wrote a book once, didn't finish it, whatever the reason, we all have a story, and it looked like it was a good opportunity because sometimes the prospect of doing something seems overwhelming, and that's what keeps people from starting, and it doesn't have to be overwhelming if you do it in bite-sized pieces. So I was thinking that that would be a good way for people to kind of get their feet wet, learn a little bit about the publishing process, how that's done through Amazon. Unfortunately, you really kind of have to use them if you want to sell books these days. That's pretty much the first place that a lot of people go to look for their books. I don't think anyone has ever gone to a publisher site. They use that as a reason to spend a lot of money for their services. But, you know, I don't think I have ever gone on Simon Schuster, for example, to look for a book to buy. So some of the perks of the online companies. Have you?
I've gone to, well, I can't say that I haven't, especially if I'm looking for a specific book. However, I do tend to go to Amazon or, for example, Barnes & Noble. Like, I have a membership with Barnes & Noble. And, you know, I can pretty much order any book, new or used, from them, and then I get membership prices. And so, however, I also really like to – the other thing I like about Barnes & Noble is I like to go to the brick and mortar. You know, to an actual location where I can physically touch the books, look at them. You know, anymore nowadays, a lot of books are available through an e-format or online or in a virtual realm. And there's a lot of, speaking of publishing and people who are writing stories out there and wanting to tell their story, it's great practice to be able to tell your story by entering contests even. And if you're interested in, like, the Amazon focus, Amazon does have literary contests that they put on throughout the year. Like, so does Kindle. Kindle Direct Publishing, for example, runs writing competitions across multiple languages throughout the entire year. So you don't have to enter the contest in English. It can be French, German, Hindi, Italian, Spanish, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it just depends on what your dialect is and what your language is. But there's all kinds of literary contests out there. Some of them pay money. Some of them will publish your book in exchange for your writing and for getting your name out there. Some will invite you to be part of entering some of your work into a larger book. So it's all possible ways to get published, and, you know, there's a lot of things out there. For example, Amazon has a storyteller writing contest where one of the prizes is like, I think it's like $27,000 or $27,500, something like that. And they also have an Amazon UK storyteller contest. So if you're interested in writing or you want to tell your story, then those are some things you can look into. And another thing to look into would be, for example, joining a Toastmasters club. You know, Toastmasters is a great way to develop your public speaking skills and to develop your leadership skills and your writing skills, all those things you need when you're putting together talking about your story. You're going to have to speak publicly about your story, about your whether you're writing a book, whether you're telling your story to a group of medical providers, and even just telling your story to groups like Michael's doing. You know, that's a great way to be able to network with other people for that as well. So, I mean, man, we could do a whole show on just publishing and writing and how to develop those public speaking and leadership skills, which is something that are skills that are quite challenging for a lot of folks that have sustained a brain injury, because a lot of us are taxed with challenges around short-term memory loss, long-term memory loss, aphasia, and just all kinds of things related to speech, related to cognition and memory. So that would be a great topic in and of itself, Kim.
Yeah, in fact, we can go on and talk about the other. I kind of kept it loose tonight, but just one thing while you're on the subject, because I hate to leave the subject when you're on it, especially when you're working on it. I felt the same as you about Barnes & Noble. It was like my favorite place to go. But Amazon and BNN got in a contest. Obviously, Amazon doesn't have brick-and-mortar stores to fund. And so the cost at Barnes & Noble is a little more. And I was in their club. And, I mean, I was hugest fan forever. And, in fact, I think that my books might – no, I took my books off their site because Amazon did – well, Barnes & Noble did a creepy thing, and then Amazon did a creepy thing. And this is just in the FYI area for y'all to learn a little politics about the book companies, is that when it came to doing book signings, I did a lot of book signings in independent bookstores around town. And then the library had a thing and several events that, like what Michael's talking about, where I spoke and did that. But when I approached Barnes & Noble, who I had loved and been a member of their club and paid my dues and bought all these zillions of books there all those years, when I came to them about doing a book signing, they won't put your book in a Barnes & Noble store, nor will they let you do a book signing if you've done business with Amazon. Now, one thing they do have to do is there's really only two places that every bookstore in the planet, or in the country anyway, orders all of their books from. If you pay a little extra, which Amazon gives you the opportunity to do, your book name winds up on that list. So if you're my best friend and you like to go to Barnes & Noble all the time and you go in and ask for my book, they'll look it up on the computer and they'll say, we don't have it in stock, but we can order it for you. They're willing to order it so they can make a cut off your book because you show up on the master ordering list, but they won't put your book in the store or let you do a book signing in their store if you've done publishing through Amazon or your business through Amazon. So Amazon countered back, and this was years ago that happened, okay? And I wasn't happy with them anymore. I quit paying my dues to be a member of the club, and I don't know, I didn't go there for a long time, and then a pandemic broke out. But I started going more to the independent bookstores and supporting them and figuring Barnes & Noble would eventually go down the crapper anyway because Amazon's got too big of a footprint too big of an ugly footprint. And so then what they came through and did, because just like with musicians, people who write books don't make a lot of money. It's something like you get 60% and Amazon gets 40% or something like that. Anyway, Amazon came through, and when I first wrote In a Flash back in 2012, my books were on the Barnes & Noble site, on their Kindle is Amazon, and Amazon is Amazon for books. Kindle is their ebook, and Audible, also owned by Amazon, is their audiobook. Far as I know, Barnes & Noble doesn't have an audiobook, but they had their Nook or whatever competed with the Kindle. And my books were showing up on their website. But then after that thing happened about the signing and them treating you like the bad stepsister for doing business with someone else, Amazon came through and said, tell you what, if you are on other sites and you take, and this is a chance you take, I was on Apple too and Google Books, wherever there were books, it doesn't take anything to upload your book to it. So I was everywhere. Amazon came through and offered to give you more money if you took it down from everywhere else. And so I did, and I am, but that's a choice because it didn't seem like a lot of people. I didn't seem to be plugging Apple and Google Books much. You know, everybody seemed to be saying Amazon or Barnes & Noble. So I don't know if a lot of people buy books on Apple or at Google Books or whatever, but I just figured I would take the larger payout with Amazon and take my books off Barnes & Noble. So anyway, people still, if somebody walks into the store and wants it, they will order it for them and take a cut off your book. They just won't let you do a book signing in their store, which I thought kind of sucked. But anyway, so there you go. That's why I've called them Anna Monster for a long time. They make it difficult to not do some of those things because books is where Amazon started, and they've got that down to an art. That's why I was really surprised that Michael's not there, especially with a website like that. It's a good thing he's out speaking. I would like to try to maybe help him a little with that. My God, who could ever remember that website? And then when I said that you must be on Amazon, because I know he was once, that made it a lot easier to just tell people with, you know, when you've got a difficult website for people to remember, to just say, look me up on Amazon. Everybody's gone there, right? But he's not there now either. So I'm not quite sure what would have happened to him there, that he would have fallen off Amazon or that they would have taken him off. So hard to say. But anyway, that's something to keep be aware of when you're writing books and looking for who you're going to have publish them, or, you know, what it might cost you. I had no idea that Barnes & Noble even had anything comparable to the program that Amazon had when I did it. So I don't know. But something to know, be friends with independent booksellers in your area, because those are the ones that will put your book on their shelves. In fact,
well,
most
other
of those
side
places...
Of that too is, the other side of that, too, mm-hmm. is that you're also helping local businesses stay open and helping
yes.
them keep people employed as well.
Yes. Yes, and a lot of people are super big into that, always have been, but since the pandemic, I suppose even more so. And usually they'll have a shelf, a whole area of local artists and put your book out. So it's a good way. Same thing I do with music on my playlist here. They're all indie artists. And so then I got kind of turned on to independent booksellers and the job they have to do when, oh my God, they've got an Amazon and a Barnes & Noble to deal with in competition. How are any of them staying open? Well, a lot of them are staying open because people support them. You know, people might see that a book is on Amazon and maybe whatever about Barnes & Noble, but they want to support their local business and wind up going to buy the book there, and I think that that's a really good thing. I appreciate the people that do that because I hate to see any of these places get so big and wind up having a monopoly over it. But anyway, so that's just a good thing to know, is to kind of be seen and have a cup of coffee. And if you're out there in the process of writing a book now, you might make it a point to know where your independent booksellers are and maybe stop and have a cup of coffee or strike up a conversation so that you already know them when you've got a book ready to go and they'll be familiar with you. I didn't do that, and so they hadn't, like, I wasn't recognizable when they walked in. They were still kind enough to put my book out, but it's probably good to establish a relationship, nice thing to do. But I was too busy going to Barnes & Noble at that time, so now that's not a problem. But anyway, so those are just a few tips, since Michael called actually and started it about being an author, and then you're writing a book. Is it, you know, one thing I've noticed is that people's attention span seems to be a little shorter. I had on a couple weeks ago, it was before you, well, let me just say my other co-host on the last day of each month, the last Wednesday of each month. The book is super long with super small print. And it's a class act. You know, it's a hardcover book with a dust jacket and all that, but it's very expensive, and it's a ton of words with small print. Excellently done. He did a great job of it, but the average reader, I don't know what you think about this in general, but just kind of a observation on my part, is that, you know, when we were coming up, reading was actually an activity. We would plan on reading a book, and that actually was the activity. You know, we maybe got a blanket and a cup of cocoa and sat and read our book, and that was the activity. And a lot of people don't have the attention span or the time for that right now, and they kind of hopped over, as far as I'm concerned. They still have them, obviously, Kindles and so forth, but that market almost kind of got jumped over because now audiobooks are so popular, because, you know, people can put those into the car while they're driving. They can put that in the background while they're feeding the kid, putting away the groceries, doing 95 other things. And it feels like, you know, there's a lot of people who would like to have the book on a shelf, but they don't necessarily sit down and read it, especially if it's super long with super small print. They just don't stay still that long at a certain age. And I don't mean to make a rash generalization. I'm sure there's people out there under 50 who still like to have reading as an actual activity, but it's not like it was when I was young, that's for sure. You know, when generations, my mom and my grandma and you know, all kinds of generations actually sat down and read books and considered that a fun, relaxing activity. And now you don't see that quite as much. And so one caution, I'd maybe bring up is, and I would do this, mine were short anyway, so I was ahead of the curve. But if you're planning on writing a real long book with small print, I would almost recommend that you do it in volumes, because particularly the people around here and people like me now who have so many floaters from my brain injury and now the beginning of cataracts, you know, I can read an article. A lot of people I know, I can read my own books. They're bigger print, you know, bigger font, and they're shorter books. And that seems to be, not that it shouldn't be longer than mine. It could be twice as long and it would still be short. But people seem to be trending toward that. If they actually buy a book, is to buy something that's shorter that they'll actually get through in some length of time. Mm-hmm. And so if you've got a really, you know, we're planning on making a 500-page book with small print, I'd almost recommend, plus you make more money that way. Not that that's the impetus for it. It's to get more people to read your book. So instead of intimidating them away with what has to be a huge price tag for you to get all those pages into a book, paperback or not, it's more printing cost involved. And so you have to charge more for the book, and a lot of people aren't going to pay, you know, $24 or $34 for a book. Some will, but you do want to get your cost back, you know, that you've put in. So anyway, just a recommendation in general out there to anybody who's writing a book. You may have a long story, but it may be behoove you to break it up into volumes, kind of like, look what Harry Potter did. What was there, maybe 11 or 12 volumes of that? Now, obviously, that would have been way too big of one book, but look how many times, once people got hooked on the first one, that they came back and got the next and the next and the next. So it's probably also a really good way to build a following. If you do make volumes instead of one hard-to-read, expensive book. So that would be a tip I'd pass on just in the For What It's Worth column. There might be others that disagree with me, certainly for a coffee table book kind of a thing. But, you know, normally those are more artsy or photography or something like that, coffee table books that people are going to spend, you know, $35, $45, $50 for something like that, not stories, nonfiction or fiction, actually, because nobody's really going to pick it up and leaf through it much, you know, whose company they're at the house. So anyway, that's the few tips I maybe would suggest to some.
I think it's really useful to be able to get tips from people who have lived the experience, because then you're not having to recreate the wheel when you're trying to learn something new and learn a new process. So effective or ineffective, it's good to hear other people's experiences.
Yeah, and I'm happy to share that with anybody anytime. It's not a competition. If you've looked on Amazon lately, there's 5 bazillion, gatrillion, patillion books out there. So I'm not concerned about anything. I can share my experience and you can take it or leave it. When I started, I went to some of the big houses, and then medium-sized houses, and then I made a decision to self-publish. So I kind of know the ins and outs, the goods and bads, I guess, of the other alternatives as well. And one thing about the big houses is one of us is super unlikely. There are so many people now, you know, and this happens in a lot of jobs these days. Well, all the time it happens, but as more and more people are able to do the functions that a publishing company used to do themselves, or have their kid do it for them, have their kid do what, you know, Random House has been doing for a million years, you know, in the same amount of time or less, there's less and less push for people to go there. And so one of the things that they're big on doing, and y'all have probably noticed this, is that the books you see the big houses publish are normally by celebrities or people who are proven to have a history. John Grisham, or I'm trying to think of some of those romance ladies and true crime ladies, but
like Nora,
you know,
Roberts.
People, yeah, people like that. So people who have already gotten a track record and have proven themselves, or people that are celebrities, that's 98% of what they publish are only those, because they figure they can get their money back on that. And there might be a small percent where they would pick up someone else, but it would have to really be a whale of a different kind of idea somehow to catch their fancy, because they're hurting, frankly. That's why their business model has switched to all celebrities and proven clients, and a lot of those proven artists aren't even going through the big houses anymore. I got an acquaintance through DAR who was fortunate and good, apparently, at writing romances. Another thing people think of when they think of the big houses is, oh, if they accept me, I'm going to get that huge, you know, $50,000, $100,000 advance. You know, that's what we all used to think, you know, that book companies gave you a huge advance. And I found out from her, and this was interesting, and the tips to tell on your way down the road, is that she got a book deal with one of the big companies, and it was a book deal to write 3 of her romance novels in 2 years. That's what the contract was. You got to write 3 books in 2 years, and we will advance you $15,000. Now, to me, that sounds like chump change, $15,000 for 3 books. Does not sound like much to me. Now, the other part of that is when the books come out and start selling, you don't get any commission or royalty on the sales until it equals the amount that they advanced you. So,
that seems kind of backwards.
Well, that's kind of why they call it an advance. Is because they're advancing you the money on sales. It's not just free money that you get up front for writing a book. It is free money you get up front for writing a book, but they're never going to pay you anything on your sales until your sales have exceeded the amount that they advanced you. You know, it's kind of funny. I was somewhat familiar with the concept because I was a financial consultant, and one of the things I sold was insurance. And there was a time where some companies would let you, you know, like maybe you buy health insurance from me and you're going to pay for it monthly. If I wanted to check a box, I could say that I wanted the annual. I wanted to be paid my commission based on the annual instead of the couple bucks a month, you know, from you paying month to month. I never did that because I watched some people. I went ahead and took it as earned, is what they called it in that context, because say that the customer drops in the 6th month. then you owed back the insurance company the other half of that advance that they gave you. And so as you would write new customers, you wouldn't get paid anything on those new customers until that advance that you had been given was cleaned up. They treat it kind of like a loan. They're just advancing you money to hopefully give you incentive to write more business, but it also gives you incentive to want to keep clients that are going to stay on the books, because you don't want to take the money up front and not. So there's a good chance if a person does get accepted by one of the big companies that they, first of all, the advances are much smaller than they used to be, particularly for unknowns. And my friend was an unknown as far as some of those other names we were mentioning. She was an unknown. But she was known some in the romance novel department, I guess, but not famous. And so that was a pretty small advance. Now, I've heard, and I can't say that I know them, so I can't swear to you by this, but it makes sense because it's happened with everyone else. The advances are going to be larger for your celebrities and your proven authors, but not so big. The company really has to measure how many people are actually going to buy that person's book. Just because they're a celebrity, people might not be interested in hearing what they have to say, especially if they've heard it a lot on TV, you know. Then they might not care so much about spending big bucks. And they are, because those are usually hardcover books, you know. So the upfront money has come down a lot. The advances have come down a lot since what we used to think of as the old days. The other thing I didn't like was if they take you, they only publish X amount of books a year. And this is what it amounted to, is it was going to be close to 3 years before my book would have come out. Okay, I'm not that patient. And so I didn't want to bark up that tree at all. What I heard about the advance and everything else, I just wasn't interested in. And then the middle category that a lot of people mistake for one of the big houses, because they have, some have some pretty impressive names. Christian Nobel is one of them, and there's a zillion of these. In fact, there's one of these springing up every day, and they call themselves self-publishers. They call themselves medium-sized press. They call themselves a lot of things. What they were called, to group them as the same type of thing versus the big house, they were called vanity presses by people on the peripheral of the industry who knew what was going on. And that sounded not complimentary, and so they tried to chase away that reference to them. But basically, these are places that they sell services to get your book printed. They'll do the printing of your book, and they do it in packages of services. And so one package might be the cheapest package, might be $12,000, and that might be just editing and formatting it and printing it. And then there's another package, and it might be $20,000. And that will create a book cover for you. and edit it and format it and print it and let it be listed on their website, which this guy still, I got to tell you, I mean, it was one of these midline publishers, and I had to laugh when he still sounded so snooty about what he did, and when he said, and you get to be listed on our website. I thought, really? That's a buzzkill. You know, it's like, I have never, until I was looking, you know, for a place to maybe publish my book, I had never been to their website, you know, and I certainly would never consider, I had never done that, you know, gone to a publishing company's website to buy a book, and I seriously doubt anybody is now with the Amazons and the Barnes and Nobles and all that out there. So I didn't really look at that as a perk. So my experience there was, I said, okay, well, what if I don't need all those services, like that first package that's so much? What if I don't need the book cover, you know, but I need the other things? And they say, too bad, these are the packages we sell, and we don't break up our services a la carte for what you need. So there may be something that you're capable of doing that you'd have to wind up paying for. And I took a look at some of those prices and what they were willing to do, and nobody really came up with a marketing plan. That was going to be me, you know, that was coming up with the marketing plan, unless you wanted to pay them like $25,000, which I didn't. And then I'm not sure what their marketing plan would have been. I don't think they were going to fly me all over to let me talk about my book. That's not the kind of house they were. And so I guess the reason I did what I did is I just decided that if I was going to be doing the marketing myself, then I didn't feel I needed to pay $25,000 or $10,000 or $5,000, because I'm blessed to have a husband who can format, who made me my book covers, and uploaded the pages in the way that they tell you to upload them, and my book got printed. The other thing about the midline publishers, and I was aghast at this, I heard somebody tell me, and these are just things to check. I'm not saying every one of them does this, but again, they're just things for you to check, is one lady told me, and she did go with a midline publisher, and they were going to do these services, and that's good because she couldn't do them. Somebody's got to do it. The only thing I really do, and I encourage everybody to do this, no matter how good you think you are, is to pay for an editor, not somebody who's going to change your work or, you know, the integrity of your work, but just a fresh set of eyes. It's embarrassing for everybody, but I've noticed them in books from the big house. My husband actually reads before he goes to bed. He probably gets 4 pages read a night, you know, but still, good for him. You know, he buys books, and even big ones with small print, and takes half a year to read them. But in any case, they told her that first, and after she sold X amount of copies, they would talk to her about being able to have an ebook. Now, see, I didn't like that because I was already looking ahead, seeing that, you know, there was a couple of years there where everybody and their dog bought a Kindle or a Nook, and, you know, reading the ebook got to be a really big thing. And then, like I said, not that it's not still, however, I do think that Audible is kind of starting to eclipse it just a little bit, because, you know, just like somebody could carry their Kindle or their Nook with them, you know, if you're used to looking at a computer screen all day, even though they have a a glare-free thing. You're still looking at a computer screen where, you know, with Audible, people have their earbuds or their headphones on all the time. They're not necessarily listening to music anymore, you know, or in their car. You know, a lot of times back before the pandemic, Gary was listening to audiobooks on his half hour, 35 minutes to and from work. And so, you know, for the company to dictate that you have to sell a certain amount of paper books before you can, and that company, by the way, didn't even have an audio alternative. They were just going to hold her back on her ebook. And I didn't like the idea of that. With mine doing it myself, my paperback book and my ebook came out at the same time, both times. And then about 6 months later, I did the audiobooks. And I've done audiobooks for a couple other people. Then I saw another thing. There's just nothing that Amazon doesn't do, Karen. I looked on there one day, and it said something about making extra money, or I'm not sure exactly what got my attention, but I went and looked at it, and it said that there's all these books there that are on Amazon. Many people would like to have their book as an Audible, but they don't necessarily want to be their own narrator, and so they hire a narrator. And there's a couple different ways that they can do that. And so if you wanted, and I did, I've got a profile up, and I've narrated a couple of books for other people that are on Audible, Amazon. And that was fun to do, but there's two methods of payment that don't make it worth your time to do it. Unless you just really like to read a lot and you don't care about what you get paid, because it's not just narrating. You're actually the producer, because you've got to narrate it a chapter at a time and then string the chapters together and present it in a way that it's ready to go. Doing their job now, okay? For very, very little. So it really doesn't make it worthwhile. The other thing I learned is I was so grateful. The second one was a poet. And I guess, and you can pick the categories that you do it in. Maybe I could just stay in poetry, or maybe children's books or something like that. But there's a lot of books on there that are thick books with small print, and to be honest with you, I can't read those anymore through my floaters. I wouldn't make a good narrator unless I had read the book first, you know, got the feel for what it was about and all of that, the tone and that, and that's way too much time to invest in what you make for doing this. And so if it's something that you can get a feel for quickly without having to read the book, and you can just, boom, start with it. I glanced at the first two of this lady's poems, and I thought, I got it. And hers were real easy to do, and I was grateful for that. I was grateful I didn't sign a contract thinking I could do something I couldn't, you know, like narrating a 500-page book that had a cool title and look like it would be fun material, you know, to do, but not anyway, more. Okay, so what were we going to finish something from last month? I know we've only got 40 minutes left in the show, and tonight's just been some tips on publishing so far. I did advertise that we were going to talk about the endocrine system and immunity, and we talked a little bit about that last time, and like I said, we only have 39 minutes this time. I wouldn't mind asking a question. In 2 weeks, and I might have asked you this, but in 2 weeks, my husband and I are having our annual physicals a year late due to the pandemic, and I've had some issues that you've brought up before, and I think that they might have to do with the endocrine system. So I wondered if just briefly, knowing that people like me are only going to have a brief amount of time to go in and see my doctor before they draw blood, I do have a patient portal where I could drop him an email before I go in. But if I wanted, or do you know, and that's fine if you don't know, but if I were going to request, you know, I never know what kind of blood work they're doing. You go in and you get your labs, right? How many times do we actually know what that entails? We just know if there's a problem. If we don't hear anything, I guess we just figure there's not a problem. But what if we know there's a problem? Then either the test isn't being run, or maybe we're just like on the outer perimeter of that scale of numbers and it's manifesting. But if you suspected that you might be having a problem with your endocrine system, what might that look like or feel like, and what blood test might you ask your doctor that they don't do as a matter of course to check it out? Or do you have to go to an endocrinologist?
That's a good question. It's a very loaded question with a lot of different questions within it and a lot of different answers. There's not just one answer. First of all, if you suspect there's something wrong with your body or you're having issues with something, you should take notes. You should be writing down what your symptoms are. You should... let me talk in first person. When I notice there's something wrong with myself, I write down the symptoms of what's going on with me. I just keep track. I keep a log. When I'm getting ready to have an appointment with my provider, whether it's a primary care physician or with a specialist, then I bring in articles to support what my where am I getting my thinking from? Like, you know, so if I feel like, you know, the fact that I haven't had a menses, for example, or, you know, for people who don't know what menses is, but a period for women that do have that, it's common to not have a period after, or your menses after a brain trauma. That's quite common with women and or after any kind of physical trauma to the body. And a lot of people don't know that. But if I'm a woman that's not having her menses, and that was a real issue for me, and then, you know, I would go to write that down as one of the symptoms. Hey, I'm not having my menses right now. And or it's irregular, or I haven't had it since the accident or since the stroke or since being diagnosed with A, B, or C. And it's important to keep track of those symptoms no matter how small they are. You know, I'm urinating more than I used to, or I can't hold my urine, or I'm having incontinence, whether it's bowel incontinence or urine incontinence. All those things that a lot of folks are embarrassed to talk about, you know, not having a libido. I was really, you know, I had a healthy sexual appetite before my brain injury, but now I have absolutely no interest whatsoever. Or the opposite. You know, I had a normal or what I considered normal sexual interest, and now I'm hypersexual, or I'm inappropriate sexually, or, you know, things like that. So anything that's different, you want to make sure that you're documenting that, and you also want to make sure that you're bringing that to your provider. Some of those things that are embarrassing to talk about, no matter how little or how big those symptoms are, it's important to discuss. And don't be afraid to research that stuff on your own, too. You know, how I found out that what was going on with me with my menses, nobody talked to me about that. You know, I didn't think to discuss that with my husband. Like, you know, the whole 6 months I was in the hospital, you know, cumulatively over that time after the accident, I never thought to say, hey, by the way, whenever, you know, you guys were dealing with a life and death situation, and while they were fixing my bones and while you didn't know what was going on and whether I was going to live or die, did I have a period and who cleaned that up? Or I didn't have one? Oh, interesting. You know, you don't think to talk about those
kinds
of things.
I didn't
and
either.
So, you know, even with the, you know, you're not having sex when you're in the hospital. And quite honestly, when you're, when you've got a polytrauma or you have multiple orthopedic injuries, that really is not even on your mind at all whatsoever. And if you're someone that's dealing with chronic pain and or an autoimmune disease or inflammatory disease, that's really not your focus a lot of times. Your focus is just being able to get out of bed. But what about the days when you can't get out of bed? That right there is a symptom. So just being able to really just know your body and document it and bring those symptoms and those changes to the awareness of the provider, know for an answer. If you know, if you, you know your body better than your provider does, you know your body better than any specialist does as well. Now, I'm not saying you can't learn from your provider or specialist, because you can, and you should be open to listening. You should be open to learning. However, don't be afraid to do your own research. You know, that's what I would say. Look it up. You know, who knew? I did not know that there were endocrine changes that took place in a person's body after a brain injury until I started to try and find out what was wrong with me, because something was wrong and I knew it. And, you know, it turns out that yeah, there's been a lot of things that have led to me getting the proper labs and the proper care that I've been able to get over the last 7 years. Specifically, I say 7 years because that's when the accident was for me. And I'm still on the search for answering other questions too. I mean, it's just a learning process. But to answer your question more specifically, take notes, write questions down as soon as you think of them. Because if you think of a question and you think, oh, I'll remember, this is such an important question, I'll remember to mention it in 2 weeks. Or I'll remember to mention it at the next appointment. I guarantee you, you will not remember, most likely.
No.
So write it down while it's fresh in your head. And then, you know, have that list of questions. Like you said, you're part of like a patient portal. Send your provider a list of questions and say, hey, you know, I read that, for example, I read that a person with a brain injury is often low in zinc and low in selenium, low in vitamin D. Is there any way that you would be willing to order a zinc lab or a D panel or a thyroid panel? And, you know, I have even gone as far as to include articles from sources that my provider would respect, like PubMed or National Institute of Health or New England Journal of Medicine, things like that, where it's not just someone's opinion blog out there that is just saying what they feel is going on. There's actual some scientific studies I'll bring in. But then I'll also bring in, you know, my opinion and just have that open communication. It's not going to hurt for them to run a lab for you. And interestingly enough, when I did bring the information about my zinc levels to my provider, my zinc levels were very low, abnormally low. And so he ended up providing me a zinc supplement. You know, and the same thing with the vitamin D. And those are the things I mentioned because those are the things that I specifically had found articles about, asked for the lab work on, and ended up being deficient in. But before that time, nobody had ordered those tests. So a lot
can
of
you tell me
an advocate for yourself.
the third one, last time he did find out about the being very deficient. I don't know that he did anything about zinc. And I'm sorry, what was the third one? Because as long as you were batting on the D, I think I would like to ask him about the Z. And what was the other one you
said?
The
other one I mentioned was selenium.
Selenium. Okay, good. I'm writing them down right now while I'm thinking about it. I tell people to do this too, always to write this stuff. Write down the questions first because you can feel the pressure and the tension of the 15 minutes or 20 minutes you have in the doctor's office. So never trust your memory. Always write it down and take it with you. Otherwise, it'll be next year.
And as a female even, I mean, this applies to either gender, but specifically for females is what I'm referencing at this moment, is, you know, have your hormones checked. What are you just having trouble with energy? Are you having trouble feeling like you've had enough, even if you feel like you've had enough sleep, waking up with no energy? You know, your libido may have something to do with your hormone level. Your menses could have something to do. Maybe you have PCOS, or polycystic ovary syndrome, that has never been diagnosed. Maybe you've acquired hypothyroidism secondary to your brain injury. Maybe that hypothyroidism has gone untreated and undiagnosed for so long that now you've developed Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune disorder or autoimmune disease. And, you know, and that brings me to, you know, something I wanted to mention as part of going over what we discussed last time, was that traumatic brain injury and spinal cord injuries, they cause a release of brain-specific proteins that may trigger an autoantibody response. So being able to have some of those inflammatory markers checked through lab work is a good start. You know, and talking to your doctor about some of those inflammatory labs that can be done, or the autoimmune labs that can be done, to see, you know, if those brain proteins have been attacking your body and suppressing your immune system. Because when those brain proteins are treated by the immune system as foreign antigens, they can evoke a systemic production of different types of, like, isoforms and different types of immune, basically where your body is triggered by the brain injury, and it is seeing that injury as something it needs to fight against. And when that happens, there's three things that can happen. Well, there's more than three, but three off the top of my head here that can confuse even a pain diagnosis. For example, I know we have 20 minutes here, so I'm going to try and skim. But when a person has a brain injury, one of the first things that can happen is that they get a hypothalamic pituitary dysfunction from that brain injury. And what that can do is it can create any number of deficiencies in multiple systems of the body, specifically your adrenals, your gonadal, and your thyroid. They may result in direct changes as a secondary result of the brain injury. Now, we already know that people with brain injuries get headaches. And
yeah,
headaches may occur and sometimes even present to providers as fibromyalgia. You know, they're like, oh, well, this person has chronic pain syndrome or they have fibromyalgia. But what they're missing is diagnosing them with the brain injury that they sustained. And people can get diagnosed with things that were actually centralized pain secondary to their TBI, which triggered an autoimmune response, which is causing a lot of that ongoing pain. Now, not everybody that gets a brain injury has an autoimmune issue. Everybody, if you've seen one person with a brain injury, you've seen one person with a brain injury. However, most of most patients do have some kind of endocrine change or hormonal change. One working theory is that in addition to that hypothalamic pituitary dysfunction is that damaged brain tissue leaks through the blood-brain barrier into the general circulation, and it becomes an antigen just like a virus or an allergen. Well, then antibodies are formed against that brain tissue that may become, for example, automatic or start to attack various tissues in the body, including the brain itself. So, and that would create an autoimmune inflammatory disorder. And that's why you see with people with brain injuries, there's also often an autoimmune inflammatory disorder that may develop after a head trauma, not only that
yes.
causes joint and muscle pain, but it also can attack other organs. For example, your eyes, with your vision, your lungs, and affects your breathing, your heart. Some people develop AFib or other types of heart issues. Your liver, your intestines, kidneys, there's no organ that is left untouched with an inflammatory response. And, you know, just like any autoimmune inflammatory condition, you know. And when we're talking about studies that are emerging over time here, there are studies suggesting that targeting the immune system for providers with anyone who has sustained a brain injury, whether it's acquired or traumatic, could offer a really much-needed therapeutic approach to treat that TBI and to improve the quality of life for folks. I mean, future studies are really just, at this point, need to be geared toward further really just defining and exploring immunological pathway and that immunological, influence of how a TBI influences our bodies afterwards. Now, you're asking, would you see an endocrinologist or a neuroendocrinologist? Or, well, you didn't say neuroendocrinologist. That's my word.
But your doctor can get you started, apparently. Your internist with certain tests would maybe indicate that you needed to go see a specialist?
You know,
or no, you'd go right to the specialist.
You know, it depends on your provider. You know, it's like, to me, it really depends on your provider. Yes, your first line of approach should be your primary care physician. Don't be disheartened, though, if your primary care physician doesn't know what you're talking about, or poo-poos you off, or treats it like it's no big deal, or you may get the comment of, oh, I've never heard of that, or that's not a thing, or that's not accurate, or I don't know where you heard that from, but, you know, that doesn't happen. You know, just because they mm-hmm. haven't studied it or they are not familiar with the study doesn't mean that it's not a thing. You know, there's been times when
right.
I've gone to my provider and, you know, and I've brought something up, and he or she is like, yeah, I've never heard of that. And I'm like, well, let me show you these articles. That's why it's helpful to bring the articles with you. You know, if you have a really good provider, they're not going to have an ego about you sharing information with them, because their Hippocratic oath is to do no harm. And to do no harm is to also be willing to learn. And how can you care for your patients if you're not willing to always be learning? And there's no way that they have the time to keep up with all the advances in medicine that are happening on a daily basis. You know, a lot of really great intuitive providers will even be thankful for you bringing that to their attention. You know, I've had some providers are like, well, did you go to medical school? Are you a doctor? Why are you using medical language with me? And they're very offended. They have a big ego about it. And, you know, I'll say to them, listen, I'm not here trying to tell you how to do your job. I'm here to think outside the box on how I can make myself better. healthy. This is about me. It's not about you. And I'm just trying to explore every possible, opportunity. And then I have other providers where I've brought something to them and they're like, oh, I've never heard of that. I'd be interested in seeing any information you can get me on that. And then, but again, it's, I wish I could say, yes, this is what you should do, or no, this is what you shouldn't do. But it's just as varied with your providers. It depends on what kind of provider you have. There are some providers who want to find out what is going on with you, and they want to invest in you as their patient because they're an invested kind of provider. And there's other kind of providers that are just watching the clock. Okay, your 20 minutes is up, you're out of here, next. And they really aren't vested in whether you're getting well or not. And so, but as far as specialists, an endocrinologist can be helpful as well, if they have the proper training and the proper education and, and they have education in brain injury and brain injury recovery and endocrine issues related to brain injury. Interestingly enough, the majority of endocrinologists specialize in either diabetes or pituitary injuries related specifically to tumors, not necessarily neuroendocrine education. Now, a neuroendocrinologist is someone that is specifically trained as a subspecialty of endocrinology. They have a dual major, one in neurology and one in endocrinology. And it's really challenging to find a neuroendocrinologist that practices clinically in the United States. There's not very many. There's a few. In fact, I'm putting together a provider list right now of neuroendocrinologists in North America. And I'll be hopefully getting that finished in the next couple months.
Good.
Because when you say, well, where's the neuroendocrinologist? Is there a neuroendocrinologist in my state? For example, in the state I'm at in Michigan, there's not a neuroendocrinologist in the whole state. There are neuroendocrinology centers. There are a lot of endocrinologists. However, no neuroendocrinologists that I've been able to find so far. It's a really specialized subspecialty group, but those folks are trained in not only neurology, but endocrinology and issues that are specific to damage done secondary to brain injury. So it goes back to advocating for yourself and researching that. And I only learned about neuroendocrinology by trying to research and find out more about my hypothyroidism and why we haven't been able to get it under control.
That's a very good point about because we think of a neurologist, an endocrinologist. When we go to a specialist, we used to think that meant something, but the good point, I brought it up about psychiatrists and psychologists and others before and now, the endocrinologist is that, we can think we're going to a specialist, but they don't necessarily specialize in what is going on with us. So if it has neuro in front of it, that's a good thing. Another thing you might try is if you get a meet and greet with the doctor, or you talk to the receptionist and say you'd like to talk to the doctor or his nurse, you'd like to know how many patients he's treating who've suffered from a traumatic brain injury. It's nice to know that the person knows something about what you have and isn't just a generalist in that practice, like your garden variety endocrinologist. So I'm glad to know that they make them. It's unfortunate they're not in every state, but if it's got a neuro in front of it, neuropsychologist, psychiatrist, neuro endocrinologist, then, and I don't know what you put in front of neurologists to get the right one, but I haven't been able to do that yet. But that's a good sign is, you know, you, because we do get frustrated having so many different symptoms and not really having anybody to coordinate our care. You know, when we get kicked out of the hospital's done with us. When we're done with surgery, the surgeon is done with us. And then, you know, nowadays, different from not all that long ago, you know, we go see our internist, and that's not who saw us when we were in the hospital. We might be seeing our internist for the first time since we went through an ordeal, and he has just had, you know, the notes. If we were in the same network, you know, he has been able to review the notes, but, you know, not been there on the day-to-day with us. And so we get frustrated going when one doctor doesn't fix us or throws another pill or whatever, and try to go out and seek help from these specialists, but not even realizing that, yes, it's a specialist, but not in what ails us. So I think that's a really good point that you brought up is, you know, checking to see if there's a neuro blank in front of the name of that doctor's specialty, or coming right out and asking. I see no reason. I'm investing my time as much as they're investing theirs to show up and see them for a worthless appointment. So I'd like to know how many people they're treating or have actively treated who have suffered traumatic brain injury and had success with that.
Yeah, those are all really important questions to ask. But it's important also just to understand that, to understand what inflammation is and what autoimmune is and what is it defined as. When you understand the basic terms, then you can talk about that in an educated way with your provider. You know, and for example, mainstream medicine, they define autoimmune disease as a chronic condition where a person's immune system mistakenly attacks healthy cells in the body. Now, the result of that inflammation is pain and tissue damage. You likely, I'm willing to bet that everyone listening knows someone that has an autoimmune disease, whether it's rheumatoid arthritis, whether it's type 1 diabetes, whether it's multiple sclerosis, lupus, Hashimoto's, celiac disease, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's more than 80 autoimmune conditions affecting every part of the body, so we're not going to be able to name even half of those even in one show.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is that autoimmune diseases are often characterized by cycles of symptoms that get worse. Those are also known as flares. And so you hear someone say, oh, I'm just having a pain flare today, or my headache's flaring up, or my, you know, the pain in my joints is flaring up, or some days are worse than others. Or you might even have periods of remission where you stop or have reduced pain or reduced inflammation for maybe several days, weeks, or months, and for some folks, even several years. But depending on the autoimmune condition, a lot of folks are, you know, treated with medications, and they may be given those medications to kind of mitigate and manage some of those symptoms, or to prevent progression of that disease by suppressing the immune system. Now, when you suppress the immune system on an immune system that's already struggling, that increases an additional chance of you getting infections, of you catching colds, of you catching viruses, of getting bacterial, like, for example, bacterial pneumonia, bacterial, colds and flu-type stuff. Now, inflammation is not the enemy. Inflammation is your body's way of warning you that, hey, something wrong is going on with you here. You know, and it could be, it's not necessarily, when we think of inflammation, we think of if you hit your arm or you hit your hand and you damage it and it swells up, that's inflammation. But you can have inflammation in your brain. You can have inflammation in your bowels, in your stomach. It's basically any part of the body's natural response to illness. Now, it can cause your blood vessels to dilate, and that's where which allows more white and blood cells to reach those areas that are damaged. And so in a way, inflammation is helpful. And acute inflammation does help the body heal from things. For example, when we're talking about those injuries or infections. However, in the long term, having constant inflammation or chronic inflammation can be very harmful to the body and can create that autoimmune condition and response. Now, when we talk about reducing inflammation, a lot of us think of the common things like taking Tylenol or ibuprofen. And it is possible to reduce inflammation with those things for some people, for a lot of people. However, there are ways out there which are available to help people reduce inflammation more holistically or naturally as well. Like for some people, if they're on certain heart medications, for example, they may not be able to take ibuprofen. You know, there's some people who aren't able to take Tylenol, or also known as acetaminophen, because they aren't able to take it due to maybe a medical condition or other medications they're on, or they just have a bad reaction to it. Or maybe they're a person that doesn't want to take medicine at all. You know, they want to go more holistic or more naturally with how they treat their body. And, you know, or maybe their religion doesn't allow them.
I think you need to anyway.
Yeah, or
the
maybe
doctor
their religion
told me
or their
it's not good to take
help.
Those regularly. Excuse me, just because a lot of times we think that over-the-counter stuff is not a problem, and we tend to think of a problem in prescriptions, but I took too much Advil and Tylenol trying to get past that inflammatory stuff that you're talking about, and they informed me that it's not good to be daily regularly taking those things. It's not good on your liver, so that shouldn't be looked at as a permanent solution. So maybe, you know, what you're going to talk about, the more natural ways, and if we need to carry it over to next time, we can, or if you just want to give us a couple of them to think about tonight. But I think that's important, because I had no idea that, you know, taking the here I've been so mindful, you know, I haven't drank in 33 years, and I've cut back to just a couple of medications, and I didn't think that, you know, I'm not on any pain medicine or anything, and I'm in chronic pain every single day, so I didn't think it was a problem, you know, to be, and I'd alternate. I thought I was being smart, you know, a couple Advil, a couple Tylenol, but I was doing it every day. And my doctor was just, like, shocked when he heard what I was taking, and he talked about the cumulative effects of doing that, and they weren't good. They were just as bad as some of the things you hear about prescription meds. So don't assume just because it's over-the-counter that gives a carte blanche to safety using something too frequently.
No, and, you know, we can discuss this more in more depth next time, too. However, it really depends on you not only to advocate for yourself with your provider, but to advocate for yourself with yourself. You have to choose life. You have to be willing to choose to living life differently. And what I mean by differently, you have to look at your dietary approaches. You have to be willing to embrace some lifestyle changes. Maybe that includes adding supplements to your diet. Maybe that includes using topical remedies. Maybe that includes using some alternative practices, like maybe acupuncture or aromatherapy or massage therapy or reflexology, different things like that. You know, it may be thinking outside the box. It may be working with your provider to incorporate some different things that can work with what their plan is for you as well, where you're partnering with your provider to come up with a treatment plan that works for you, not that works for them, that works for you. Now, when we're talking about alternatives to NSAIDs for pain relief, now NSAIDs, we're talking about like ibuprofen, for example, the Advil, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Some alternatives that are out there that may work for some people is, we've already mentioned acetaminophen, but some people can't take acetaminophen, so then what? Well, there's some great homeopathics out there, and one is called arnica. Arnica is also known as wolf's bane or leopard's bane, and it's basically a flowering plant in the sunflower family. However, arnica is used as a medication to reduce inflammation, and it can be taken orally or topically, and it's been seen to help with acute trauma and bruises and soreness and arthritis, and actually it's quite powerful to help reduce swelling and inflammation. And so, you know, there's something called Arnicare, which is like comes in a cream, a gel, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to act like a commercial for a specific product, but those are things, that is a product that has worked for me to help me manage some of my inflammation when I'm out of, you know, is Arnica. And, you
Great.
Can grow Arnica yourself. You can procure it from your own garden, and so, you know, you don't have to use it from a specific commercial establishment, I guess is my point. Another thing is bromelain. Bromelain is an enzyme extract that's derived from the stems of pineapples. You know, bromelain has a lot of natural anti-inflammatories in it. And it's well documented in a lot of research studies. And there's been a lot of studies that correlate bromelain with reducing the symptoms in severe osteoarthritis. You know, and then there's capsaicin cream. Now, that's made from hot. A lot of people can't eat hot peppers. You know, they're not able to tolerate that. However, there is the capsaicin cream they don't have to eat. It's a topical. And it's used to treat aches and pains of muscles and joints, such as arthritis, backaches, sprains, etc. Now, the way it works is it decreases a certain natural substance in your body called substance P, P as in Paul, that helps pass those pain signals to the brain. Now, one thing you got to be careful with capsaicin cream, though, is you don't want to touch your eyes, your nose, your mouth, or your private parts, your genitals, because that can light you up. That would be irritating.
Yeah.
But then there's fish oil.
No kidding.
And lots of
Okay, just a minute.
Fish oil.
We can continue finishing that. There's 60 seconds until, I don't know if you knew this before, but there's 60 seconds until the live people listening won't hear us. That's why I need to tell people, if you want to hear the last few minutes, call in to 424-243-9540, or the whole show is played in its entirety in the archive, and I want to thank you all for calling in to listen. Always appreciate you, and good night, God bless, have a great week. And on Sunday night, we're having a new show premiere. They'll be on the third Sunday of each month, which happens to be this coming Sunday, called Moving Forward with a team of women, Kelly KJ Jones and Dr. Valentina. And so tune in same time on Sunday night, and welcome them to the BIRN host platform. And thanks so much for being here. Okay, now we'll go back to you. The reason why I do that is a few times we talk over, but you get cut off, cut off in mid-sentence when the clock stops. The tape keeps rolling, and they'll be able to hear you finish, but that's why I have to make a direct break right before.
No,
a lot of people
awesome.
Drop off and aren't hearing you.
I think it's great that
I don't know
that
I've ever told
that to
you
folks.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, you have.
Most of the folks know it. I should
great.
Have told you. Because the guy said 90 seconds and you were just going into after the next one. I was writing down bromelain, then I got the hot pepper caspasian, and you were just coming to the next, and he said 50 seconds, and I'm like, no way. that's not going to come out.
Oh, see, I can't hear
anyway,
the time countdown like you can, apparently.
I know. I don't think that you probably can. You can only guess, and it's quicker than, like, my clock will often say a minute 10 when it says 90 seconds in my ear. So it definitely goes by what I hear in my ear. So if I ever do that in the future and cut you off and tell everybody good night, so we can finish the last one. They're going to hear, and like I said, I don't like to make a big deal out of this part of it because nobody is here right now listening to it. And in the archive, if I wasn't saying anything right now, they'd just be hearing it continuously. But so I'll have to think of some kind of signal or something to just break and tell everybody good night and thanks for listening. And but it sounds like you have a few of these, and I'm sorry we got off on the books tonight. Michael kind of started it, and then when I saw that you were writing, it just made me think of a couple tips, and I don't know anybody that – I know that's off topic, not the first time that's happened, folks, but I would like to talk more about this next time, and that will be in August, and so much has gone on. You were coming to inflammatory and some of these things that help the autoimmune and the inflammatory system, and not that we know a lot yet about these different variants, and I don't want to make the show about that. It's just that, you know, there's yet another variant now, the Delta, that is in every state, and I'm as confused as ever, you know, than I was even in the beginning, because, you know, now it simply wasn't a popular decision for either side, with the public getting COVID fatigue, sick of mandates, sick of masks, sick of everything being closed, sick of being in their house. And summer came, and that was it. And the politicians, for the most part, across a lot of boards, you know, took away the mandates, and people take that to mean what they want it to mean, and that's that this thing is over, and they can go out and congregate and not wear a mask. And, you know, it scares me. And I'm not saying what side of the platform I came down on or if I even know for sure, but, you know, I don't know who's had a vaccine and who hasn't. I know that I got one that they said at the time was 95% effective, and then I heard later that all of them that said that, it was 95% effective for people who are healthy. But if you were older and had underlying conditions, it wasn't really 95%. It was something less than that if you were elderly or had pre-existing conditions, which is still not telling anybody not to or to. Some protection is better than zero protection, but, you know, before when people were wearing masks, you didn't really have to know, and now I'm kind of creeped out. You're walking around and nobody much around here. I still really haven't been in a lot of places, but, you know, you don't know if people have had a vaccine or not, and they keep arguing.
Well,
on TV. So I'd like to talk more about keeping our immune system healthy next show. And I know that the inflammatory, you talked about all of the organs that can be affected by autoimmune disorders. And, you know, with COVID, with the virus, that's the way it, the first manifestation was acting, is it was attacking, you never knew. It might be someone's liver, it might be their heart, it might be their brain. Same thing, you know, it was traveling, picking out an organ or two that it wanted to attack. And I think that August show will be a good time to pick up and talk about the autoimmune again and do a little update to see what's happened, because, you know, things changed when we tore off the page to it being the first day of summer, and all of a sudden, I don't know about Michigan, but all of a sudden everybody here went back to living life as they did before, and I was like, wow, I felt, it was just me, but I felt safer locked up at home. Or when we all had to wear masks, I can't breathe in those damn things. I just stayed places a shorter amount of time. And when I was outside, I didn't wear a mask, but I also didn't get by people. You know, I social distanced and I wasn't gathering with a group of people or whatever. And so, I don't know, now on this new variant, and they have their eye on another one and everything that's going on in other countries, and, you know, just the whole deal. It would be good to talk about building our immune systems, because if people haven't started, you know, let's see, I guess we're just a couple weeks into July, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how June, how July, and when we get to the August show, how things have played out to that going back to normal deal, and whether that was just a popular political decision or if it was in the interest of public health.
Well, we still have this new thing. And when you're talking about COVID and when you're talking about all those things, and it parallels with what I was talking about earlier about lifestyle choices and making lifestyle changes. And part of those lifestyle modifications, and it doesn't have to be a permanent modification, but some of those lifestyle modifications are physical distancing, you know, and social distancing and proper hygiene practices. Those things can, those are the sure things that can help protect you from hopefully acquiring COVID-19. You know, currently no research supports the use of any specific supplement to protect against COVID-19. However, there are things that we can do to help build our immune system, like you were saying, and help protect our bodies and institute preventative measures to help us prevent colds, the flu, and other infections. And, you know, it begins with what we're putting into our bodies, through whether that's food, drink, nutrition, you know, things like that, and how we're treating ourselves. But again, that goes back to that self-advocacy piece and learning about those basic tenets on how we can do things for our bodies that is going to help us strengthen our, not only our immune system, but to be able to, as we're learning how to do those things, we're also learning how we can speak to our providers and get our needs met. And those are definitely some of the things I would love to discuss.
Yeah, I'd like to discuss that and a little bit about, you know, I heard a thing the other day, and I'm certainly one of those that came out of this whole thing depressed. And I got to say that it isn't as easy to be good to yourself and do all the things that you should when you've got that neurofatigue depression thing going on, and it's not just people with brain injury, although I imagine there's more than just me out there in the listening audience, but people in general. I heard this on the news the other night. There's a lot of people that, you know, are suffering kind of a PTS or depressive or anxious state from this thing that swept us all off the rug and then, you know, media didn't help. Everybody had a dissenting point of view. Nobody knew what to believe, you know. You know, is the WHO, CDC, are they credible? Are they not credible? The numbers are changing all the time. Is it because of the science or is it because they're lying? You know, such a, I think a lot of people came out with a heaviness, except for those people I'm talking about that never really took it that serious to begin with. And it was summer and man, they were done, you know, done with COVID, done with mandates, done, you know, and went back to living their life the way that they always have. And now that they're not identifiable, you know, whether they've had a vaccine or not, it makes me more nervous. So, like I said, it'll be interesting to see how things unfurl between now and August. You know, talk about June, July, August, the months of summer, and then being able to talk about that before, you know, before the kids go back to school, if they're going, and as we're going into fall, when more people will be, you know, it gets colder in our area, not the second week in August, but that would definitely be a time to implement some of these things that we'll talk about at that time to protect ourselves for the rest of the summer and going into fall if you are planning on continuing all the outdoor activity that's been going on and taking it inside. You know, the restaurants now don't even have a limit on them here, and the movie theaters are open again. Everything is open like it was before. I haven't been there, but I see it on TV, you know, and I'm like, wow, nothing changed. You know, nothing changed. I mean, the numbers have gone down some, but if you've got 16,000 a day dying instead of 50,000 a day, that's still a lot of people. I mean, and those are just the dying ones. There's all those long haulers that are out there, people that get it and wind up being like us. They got crap to deal with for the rest of their life, and some of it's pretty serious, and nobody ever kept tally of those people. So I think it'll be a good conversation to motivate.
Well, the other thing is that, you know, we're talking about what else I'd like to discuss at that during that time as well, as part of the strengthening our immune system, is that inflammation is not always caused by an internal factor. So it's not always caused by trauma to the body, or not always caused by a health issue such as cancer or Alzheimer's or heart disease, et cetera, et cetera. And there's numerous other health conditions that can cause inflammation. But sometimes it can be caused from extrinsic factors or those things outside of us. So like the type of foods that we eat. And if those foods have been exposed to certain chemicals, and those chemicals are causing inflammation in your body because you're ingesting those foods, or maybe there was a certain pesticide used, or a certain medication given to the animal that you're now eating that you're having a reaction to. So, you know, it's not necessarily something that has happened to you due to a trauma or illness from your own self. It may be due to something that you're ingesting or eating and how that food or that liquid is processed. So, So those are things to consider as well. So inflammation,
yep, I want to talk about those.
Inflammation throughout the body is, and chronic inflammation throughout the body, you know, that's something you have to consider, is what is your diet? And we can go into more of that when we talk then too.
Okay, sounds good. Well, thank you for being here tonight. And like I said, audience, we deviated a little off the track, but there isn't anybody I've heard on here who hasn't thought of writing a book, wants to write a book, started writing a book once, has got notes to write a book sometime, or has had questions about how it's done. So long as Michael started it and Karen's writing one, and I just thought I'd share a little bit of what I learned. So hopefully that information was helpful to people. If not now, I bet it will be in the future. Just some things to ponder and questions to ask. It's like we talk about with the doctors, you know, some of the questions to ask before you wind up getting signing any contract with anybody. Thank you. I hope that they were helpful. That was just, you know, learning by my own learning curve. And so I was fortunate to not know the questions, but I learned the questions to ask because people would bring up little things like the things that I mentioned when I said I was writing a book and you know, all the things down from the deal on advances to those packages at those publishers and having somebody put a limit. I mean, that's what you got to, especially if you're in the brain injury community, but in any community, if you're not used to signing documents, you know, you want to be careful. That person didn't realize when they signed the document with their publisher that they weren't allowed to make. Because I asked them, I knew their book was short. I asked them about narrating their book for them, and they said, oh, I can't even have a Kindle. And they haven't discussed anything about an audio book, but I have to sell a certain amount of my book before they'll allow me to do a, you know, a Kindle or an ebook. And I thought, oh my God, you know. anyway, so it helps. There's certain things, and on another night we can talk about that, the things that you need to know how to do, and that will help you to know what things you might know somebody who knows how to do or be related to somebody or something that would be easy for you to learn how to do. Then you'll know, you know, when it comes to those packages and things that you might see at the midline publishers, whether you want to go ahead and do it yourself and just find a couple a la carte people to pay a more reasonable fee to. One thing I'll tell you is I've always gotten my money back in a month or two, and I can't say that for almost anybody that I know. So not that they don't ever, a lot of them don't ever. People that spend what my friend I was talking about did, I don't know how many books he would have to sell at $34 to get what he put into getting that thing published. But anyway, so just some tips like that. So thank you, Karen, for being here tonight. I hope you have a good rest of the month of July, and I'll look forward to picking this up. I don't want to use the word immunity and endocrine again, so I'm going to write down inflammation in really big letters here, and I'll be going in to book some shows in the next week. I hope I'm going to be helping these new ladies with their show Sunday night, but and I've been getting them trained in the middle of everything else I told you, but I want to sit down and book some shows, and so I'll put something to the effect of inflammation and helping our immunity. And now I'm seeing lightning in the distance for the next big storm. So I'm going to have to sign off, go let the dogs out before the lightning gets the dogs. I've got one that's super scared when he starts hearing the thunder roll in the distance, and he just does not want to go out. and the other two will stay out too long. And when the wind starts kicking up and is really bad, got as many huge branches as fell down during that storm the other night. I'm grateful I had let the dogs out for quite a while. I was out there with them for about a half hour before that storm started, and then I locked the gate so they couldn't go out the dog door. And thank God, man, the size of these branches that fell would have killed my dogs right out where they run around in the backyard. These huge branches from old trees came down, and nasty, nasty stuff. But hopefully it won't be as bad tonight, and those 16,500 people will get their power back by tomorrow, and this won't slow it up any. That would really stink. I mean, in 12 hours that we spent, we did okay because it was midnight to noon, and I didn't go to bed until after it went out, and then I sleep till 8:30 or 9, so, you know, it was light by the time I got up. Gary gets up at 4. It was a little harder for him, but all of a sudden, you know, you don't have the computer to get on, right? All the stuff that you normally do makes you know when you're a certain age how much things have changed to have your power out for a while, you know, because you go to the computer, nope, not going to do that. Flip on some music, nope, not going to do that. The phone, you know, doesn't have any internet on it. And so thank God I've got some old transistor radios Gary made fun of me for keeping, but that was, and ironic as it would be, during the time our power was off, I thought radio stations had a generator, but the talk radio station in our area that I always used to listen to whenever a weather event would happen, couldn't turn on TV or anything either. So I went to turn them on, and they apparently were off the air that night, because I could flip it to FM and the FM stations were playing music, but the talk radio that stays on the weather for the whole time the event is happening, they were, so I think their power was off too. But anyway, all right, have a good week, month, and we'll see you next time. All right,
sounds
good night.
Like a plan.
Thanks, Karen. All right,
good night,
take care. Good night. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.